Welcome to our podcast series, Talking with Traders, hosted by expert trader Garth McKenzie in London, from where he's interviewing various guests on the topic of trading.
My name is Garth McKenzie. I've been trading since the age of 16. I headed up the retail derivatives desk for a large stockbroking firm in South Africa from 2003 until 2009. After that, I left the corporate world and I started traderscorner.co.za, an online service that caters to DIY traders, providing analysis and trader education. I also ran the Traders Corner TV show on Business Day TV for over 10 years, from 2009 to 2019. I've recently relocated to the UK and I trade both the South African and the offshore markets. Through this series, we hope to connect traders with other traders across the globe to share information, tips, and general advice on derivatives trading. The podcast series is brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. On to today's episode. Joining me on today's podcast is Mark van der Bael, who goes under the name Real Chartist. He's a trader of the top 40, the Aussie 40 futures. He's based down in Cape Town and has a lot of interesting stories to tell. Mark, it's really fantastic to talk to you today. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me on the podcast.
It's a pleasure, Garth. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, excellent. I'm really glad. It's been a long time since we've spoken, so it's nice to catch up in this format. As we were speaking, but just before we went onto the recording, you know, this is just an informal chat and it's a podcast that's really just to learn a little bit about you and about the way you trade and your history in the markets and how you view things. So I'll kick it off with a couple of questions and then we can just have a conversation, really.
Yeah, sure.
First question is, Mark, when did you start trading? What got you interested in the markets from the beginning?
When I was at school, we entered a share buying or a share trading competition. It was a very, very simple competition. And I remember we bought, three of us in a group. I think it was run at the Argus that time. My memory is not that clear about it. But I remember us entering and then just buying some shares and not doing anything about it afterwards, and ended up winning the competition. So it's only when we got the notification that we'd won the competition that I realized that, okay, there was actually something, you know, in this that sort of piqued my interest. And I'd been buying and selling, you know, as a hobby, sort of all through my life. But when I really started trading was when about, I would say, 15, 20 years ago. So it's difficult to determine exactly when I started trading, because I got into it, I scaled into it, which is something that I can really recommend to anybody. You know, a lot of people come to me and say, oh, I want to start trading. I was very, very lucky in that the company that I was involved with, we were in the exhibition space, and our competitor in the UK bought us out. And one of the conditions of the buyout was that I would stay on as a director, but would gradually scale out. In other words, work 4 days a week for a certain period of time, and then work 3 days for a period of time. So in that time that I had free, I was able to trade. So I didn't become a full-time trader straight away. And I really, this is one thing that I recommend to people is, you know, don't just give up your day job, if you know what I mean. Have something in the background there, and have some capital as well. So I would say 20 years ago, scaling out period was about a year or so. Really full-time, having to, you know, put bread and butter on the table was 15 years ago. That's how I've been trading.
Very, very interesting. And and I mean, that's such good advice. It's what I also give to a lot of people is to say, you know, don't, if you can't make it as a part-time trader, don't think you're just suddenly going to make it when you become a full-time trader if you haven't gotten a little bit of track record behind you. So I think that's very, very helpful advice.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the point you also make about having capital is such an important point as well. You know, I've always taken the view that you need to treat trading like a business. And like in any business, you need to be adequately capitalized if you're going to have a fighting chance of doing it successfully.
Well, what I've learned over the years and in speaking to people and interacting with people is that I maintain that you need to have Three lots of capital. If you're going to trade, you need to have all your debts and stuff and things like that paid off. You know, don't trade with money that you can't afford to trade with. But then if you have capital to trade with, break it up in three bits, because the first bit you're going to just lose completely. The second bit you're going to lose slowly. And the third bit, you know, you're going to hopefully make a success of. So if you've got 300,000 Rand, for instance, the first trade with 100,000 Rand, you're probably going to, you know, you'll make some money. If you're extremely lucky, you know, you'll make a lot of money and you'll go on to great things. But more than likely, you know, 95% of the time, you're going to lose all that 100,000 Rand. Mm. Then you're going to go on to the next 100,000. You're going to battle a bit. It'll take you a longer time to lose that. And then, eventually, hopefully by that time, you'll have learned your lesson by the third 100,000 Rand.
Yeah,
it sounds bleak, but that's the that's the advice.
Well, absolutely. Look, and I also, having been in the broking world and traded for half of my life, I can definitely agree with you on that. The statistics don't stack up very well in terms of the success level of people who try and do this for a living. There's a very thin edge of the wedge that makes it.
Yeah, what I'm saying is don't take all your capital and trade with it immediately. You know, have some for whatever's going to happen. The market conditions of the last couple of weeks have just shown, you know, that it's like there are people that have been wiped out, people that have been trading for a very long time who never thought this thing would happen. You know, the black swan comes and takes a crap on your on you.
Absolutely. No, you're right. I mean, this market crash that we've lived through now, this coronavirus, the beginning of 2020, is something that none of us have ever seen, the speed of this crash. And you're right. I mean, unfortunately, it's destroyed a lot of people. If we go back to your early days as a trader, what was it like? You mentioned that you scaled in and that that you gradually took it up and ultimately became a full-time trader over a period of time. But were you successful generally from the outset, or did you blow up an account or two in the beginning, as so many of us do in the beginning? Or how did your early years work out for you, Mark?
You see, what tends to happen is that you have great success initially, and I was playing around with a small amount of money, so it was okay that I blew up an account or two. So yes, I did blow up an account or two, and the problem is that traders go through periods. So initially things happen very, very easily, and it's almost like you have a situation where ignorance is bliss kind of thing. You don't overthink things. You know, you enter trades easily and you make money easily, and you think that is going to be like that for your trading career. We'll talk maybe a little bit later about the phases that you go through, but initially things happen very easily. You know, the market was also very different to what it is now. I think certainly the Aussie that I trade. But initially I had good success. You know, I felt like I had an affinity to the market. I felt like I was kind of, so initially, and that is not, is a good thing and a bad thing, because you need the confidence, but then, you also need to realize that is something which necessarily can also, or is not necessarily something that can carry on forever.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's right. And now just tell me, you trade full time for a living at the moment, just trade. Do you have any other business interests or other sources of income from outside of trading, or is it all just trading that you basically
all just trading?
All just trading.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I must say a huge amount of respect to you for that, because I'm not at even that point in my own trading career. I still have things on the side, my website and Traders Corner subscribers and TV shows and doing things like this podcast and what have you, because I'm still at the point where I almost feel like I need that little bit of risk-free income just to pad me over. And at some stage, I suppose one day I'd really like to take on the trading completely full time and then say, just trade for a living. But I know that is a huge step to get to for a lot of people. And so a huge amount of respect to you for doing that.
Yeah. Knowing that but I think, Garth, what's very important is also looking at different stages of life. You know, you've got two kids and a wife and stuff like that. So,
yes.
You know, that is a massive responsibility. I would say if if you're a young guy starting out, you know, whatever, go for it. You know, you can lose money and you can start again. If you have responsibilities and you have people that you've got to look after, that's really when you can't play around with your future. Okay. You know, if you get to my stage where I'm later stage in life, I've kind of like, I've almost simplified my life. I had a big house, big family home, and you know, all the cars and stuff like that. I've scaled down. I'm 55. I'm kind of more into, you know, wanting to travel and to do stuff like that. So it's about stage of life stuff, and be very sure where you are in terms of stage of life.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice. And the point about, you know, having kids and a family and what have you, it is, I mean, I've certainly found in my own trading over the years that when I was younger and I didn't have kids and a family, my appetite for risk was greater. And trading seemed easier then. And I think it was very much a psychological thing. And I've found over the years, since the kids have come along and the wife and the associated extra commitments, financial commitments that come with that, it has definitely changed my psychology in terms of risk taking and my approach to the market. So I think you're right. And I think it's a great point that you make about, you know, looking at your stage of life, and also then something you mentioned earlier in the conversation about making sure your debts are paid off and that you've got money that you can afford to trade with. Because exactly. I think it's very important not to trade with scared money, because I think the moment you're trading with scared money, then your psychological approach to that just changes completely. And it's difficult to do the right things when you're trading with scared money.
And you can't explain that to anybody. You know, you can't. It's only when you're doing it that you'll know and you'll get the feeling of how you relate to risk. Because I think what people don't realize, and it's something I thought about when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about before this interview, is what do we really get paid for when we make money trading? So guys think, well, you know, you get paid because you're smart and you're able to work out what the direction of the market is. You're able to analyze charts, all those kinds of things. But what you're really getting paid for is taking risk. Okay, that is really what you're getting paid for. And if you don't take risks, you're not going to make money. Okay, and if you are scared, and can't take risk, or taking risk for the wrong reasons, that is going to be when you have the stuff ups happening.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. You can't trade with scared money. Yeah. And just in terms of that, I mean, talking about being willing to take risk, that is, as you say, it's what we do as traders. You take a view, you look at the market, you say, well, is it going up or down? And how much am I willing to lose to find out whether I'm actually right with my view or wrong? That's now, right. when it comes to that, what sort of percentage of your capital do you allow yourself to risk when you take on a trade?
If I have to be honest, most probably consistently more than I should. Okay. This is something that traders do all the time. But you know, my risk window is daily. So I'm a day trader. Mm. So when I find that I'm really make a mistake, and I think this is something that when you speak to other traders as well, the things that you really need to talk, because everybody will boast about how much money they can make and all, you know, the great trades that they've put on, whatever. What you really need to talk to people about is the mistakes they make, and it's when you've taken on that added risk and you made the mistake that other people actually learn. And the biggest mistakes I've made is with overnight trades. When you've broken those parameters, when you've broken your rules, when you've had something that you're not under your control, you know, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. And you trade the top 40. So, I mean, I also trade the top 40 future, and I know that that thing can gap up or down big time overnight sometimes.
In the last couple of weeks, we've seen, I think, 3,000 point gap. And then it's not a gap that closes. It's a gap that extends. Yeah. It extends to 4,000 points. I think we had 4,000 points down in a day. Now, you work out what that is. You know, on one contract, that's 40,000 rand.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the margin was about, it's now, they've actually increased the margin because of the volatility. But I think the margin was, the Aussie contract price was about 55,000. Let's call it 55,000. Mm. So you've lost, if you were trading one contract, you've lost 40,000. That's what, work it out. 70% of your margin, 80% exactly. of your margin.
Yeah, it's a huge chunk of the money. Yeah. And you only trade the Aussie, right? You don't trade stocks at all.
I do have one or two. Yeah. Look, but I wouldn't trade. I wouldn't say that that's trading. Okay. I made a decision at the beginning to make this ultra simple, and I don't want to have to decide whether it's going up or down is hard enough. So I don't even have to make the decision as to what I need to trade. All I need to decide is whether it's going up or down.
Yeah.
There have been times, to be honest, there have been times when the Aussie has had some volatility issues or liquidity issues. Let's rather put it like that. You know, the Aussie has changed its nature quite a lot recently because of the weighting of Naspers. And some of the dual listeds, where it's really been difficult to determine what happens in a day because of the weighting of Naspers, which just drags the market along and sort of anchors it and doesn't allow the market to fluctuate and trade. You know, we need volatility and the market to move as traders. But when we have something like a lead weight like Naspers, is, you know, about 30% of the market, then it makes it difficult. So I have at times thought about trading other things, but I've stuck with the Aussie, and now the volatility is great again. You know, it's the ATR is like at the moment 2,000 points. So
yeah,
it's crazy.
ATR, for those listening to the podcast, I don't know what that stands for. It stands for average true range, and it refers basically to the daily trading range over a period of time. You're listening to Talking with Traders, a podcast series brought to you by IG, a world-leading online trading and investment provider. If you haven't checked out the IG online trading platform, please do so and visit IG.com. Also, make sure you subscribe to the podcast series on your favorite podcast app or website by clicking on the subscribe button, and you'll be notified weekly as we release new episodes.
I think the normal range, the normal value is about 400, 500. Mm-hmm. So you've got a good movement there, you know. And if you're looking to make a couple of thousand rand a day, which is, I think, what people who have an income need to make, you know, that is a reasonable kind of value to be going for.
Yeah. That actually just makes me think. I mean, a lot of people ask me, they say, oh, well, how much money would I need to have in an account in order to make a living trading? And then I always say, okay, well, it's first of all, you've got to have all the other things that you mentioned in place, no debt, low cost of living, blah, blah, et cetera. But then you need to work it backwards and say, okay, well, let's say, how much money do you need to live per month? Then let's just take a figure, 50,000 Rand, for example.
That's right.
A lot of people might need more, but let's just use 50,000 Rand as an example. So that's a monthly figure that you need. So you need 600,000 Rand per year to live, and bear in mind this is after tax money. So the next question then is, right, how much percentage wise do you think you can make on an annualized basis, and whatever that number is, let's just say you feel that you can make yourself 20% in a year. If you're ambitious and that's a possible target, then your 600,000 Rand means that you would need 3 million Rand in a trading account that you would then need to be able to try and generate that 600,000 Rand annual living cost.
Of course,
I mean, no, we're not even taking the tax considerations into account. So in fact, if you added the tax back onto that, then you'd probably need 5 million plus on the sort of the numbers that I'm talking about. So in that context, I mean, how do you view that? And from an annual profitability perspective, what do you feel is reasonable and achievable on your...
You see, Garth, I don't even want to tell you because if I tell you what I really do, it's going to create expectations. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm a day trader, so I take my profits daily. Now, I would say with an account of R500,000, you could have an income of, 30,000-40,000 rand a month fairly easily if you manage that risk very carefully. Yeah. But this is day trading. This is, considering it as a job from 9 to 5, and wanting to make, 2 or 3,000 rand a day, if that's your requirement to make, I would say that to answer your question directly, if you wanted to make 2 or 3,000 rand a day, I would say you needed 300,000 rands worth of trading capital as a day trader.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. And as you say, you're a day trader, you don't hold any positions overnight. So it is very, very different.
I try not to.
Yeah. And being a day trader also does allow you the ability to then obviously to take some additional leverage that you might not otherwise take as an overnight trader. I mean, on an intraday basis, do you know sort of how much leverage you potentially have on at any given time as a maximum during the day?
Well, I can work it out. So, a Aussie contract at the moment costs, 65,000 Rand, and the Aussie is trading at the moment as we speak at 40,000. Mm. At 40,000. Yeah. So that gives you an exposure to 400,000 Rand. Okay. So work it out. So what is that? It's a leverage of about eight or so, something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's my leverage.
Okay. So you'd take your, you basically go full margin on a on an Aussie trade, then, if I'm understanding you correctly.
I don't have a choice. If I'm trading an Aussie, that's the margin that I have.
Okay. And you mentioned that your approach is really very simple, that you decide either the market's going up or the market's going down, and you try and keep it as simple as possible. I mean, are you in a position to share any just basic technicals that you use to guide you in terms of what makes your decisions in that respect?
Yes, absolutely. I have a couple of setups, and they change as the market changes. And this is a really important thing that I think people need to know as well, is that we are taught as people to have perseverance and to stick with something. The market will teach you that you need to be very, very flexible in terms of your approach. So different market conditions call for different setups. So I've got a couple of setups like gap closes technical setups like terminating diagonals and things like that. One of the big things that I use is a terminating diagonal. So if I see a price move and it's a counter trend move, I tend to like those kind of situations where you look for, if the market is moving today, for instance, the Aussie traded up, it traded up about 600-700 points, creating a terminating diagonal. Mm. Now I'm able to, because I'm technically fairly adept, able to see the top of that, sell short, and hope that we're going to come back down. And it actually did come back down and gave all those 600 points back.
Yes.
So it's a purely technical setup using a line on a 5-minute chart. So I don't know if many of your listeners wouldn't necessarily be doing that kind of thing, but those are the kinds of things that I look up. And I'm probably a bad example to look at as a trader, because I enjoy those counter trend things, and I wouldn't recommend someone who's not experience to be doing those kinds of things. Although I'm with the trend because I shorted today, but that's the bigger trend,
Yes. Yeah. And obviously right now as we speak, the bigger trend certainly is down. And it's interesting because I know exactly, I mean, I was watching the Aussie this morning and I watched it and I thought, well, if it breaks up above 40,500, then it's probably going higher. And I didn't take the trade, but and later it did come right back down, as you said. And
I shorted there at 40,900 and we're now trading at 40,250. So that's my trade for the day. But I'm a bad example, you see, because I can live on that little, well, it's not such a few points, it's like 800 points or 700 points or so. But that's me done for the day, you know.
And that's a good day. And now you can go out and walk your dog, except you can't because we're all in lockdown at the moment.
Well, I walk up and down the parking garage, which is quite nice. I've got an air bridge that goes over to the parking garage. So I'm actually getting more exercise than I did before because I'm going up and down the parking garage.
Oh, that's brilliant. If you had to go back and look over the years, do you have in your mind best trade and worst trade? And you mean you don't have to talk figures, but are there certain trades that stand out for you as being your best and as your worst?
I don't really have a best trade because I don't really enter, you know, long-term trade. So if I had to think about a day, there's no particular day that's standing out, stood out, except maybe in the 2007 kind of decline, which I was also sometimes counter trending. Some of those gaps were closing, and you would I remember one day trading, and it was a 1,500 point gap that just closed in the last sort of 10 minutes. So that was a great day for me. But as I say, I think it's more important to talk about the bad trades. Mm. So I always tell people about the pool trade, which is quite interesting.
Sounds interesting.
I had bought a house, and I'd been in the house for about a year, and I'd managed to buy the house cash. And the house needed a pool. So I got the pool guys in, and they were busy in the garden. And I remember being able to look out from my office at the progress of looking at the progress of the pool. And I thought to myself, you know, wouldn't it be great? And I had a certain amount of money capital that I'd been playing with. Let's say it's 500,000 rand, and I didn't want to necessarily dip into that money to pay for the pool. Mm. Okay, and I thought, okay, maybe I could make the money for this pool within like a week or a particular period of time. I thought, wouldn't that be neat? Okay, so I remember the market was very, very bullish at the time. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to go a little bit extra today. You know, maybe we can make this pool trade. Well, market dropped, and then I doubled up. And then the next minute, the market dropped again. And I remember that pool cost me about three or four times what the pool should have cost me in the end. I will never forget that. And, you know, it made me use the pool a lot, but that was the pool trade. Yeah. So if you're trying to get out of the market, if you're trying to impinge your own ideas or your own needs onto the market, you are going to get smacked. That's, I think, the really important thing that people need to realize.
Yeah, that's right. And I also find that materializing the losses is not always a good idea. You're realizing, you know, how many swimming pools you could have bought or how many cars you could have bought.
Yeah, you need to move on. You need to move on.
Yeah, you need to sort of see it as just figures. And the figures are just exactly right. That. They're just figures. Don't materialize them.
But talking about things like that, on the opposite, materializing your winnings is quite important, I've found. You know, when you are going through periods of making money, sometimes it can just be a figure in your account. Take some of the money. I found that this was very important. Take some of the money and treat yourself and materialize it. Yeah. Because, you know, it's as you say, it's materializing it. Don't materialize the negative, materialize the positive.
Yeah. Yeah. So reward yourself. No, I think that's right.
Reward yourself. Absolutely.
I know. I mean, I've certainly done that in the past with things, and it does help to be able to then at least say, you know, that's a reward. It's like a little prize for doing good work and trading successfully. And it's something you can actually at least appreciate the hard slog that you go through.
Yeah.
And we're running out of time now, Mark. So it's the time flies when you're having fun, as they say.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you one more quick question, and then we'll wrap it up. But if you've answered it a little bit in the beginning, but I'm going to just talk about it again. If somebody came to you, a young guy or young woman came and said, well, they're wanting to start trading and wanting to make it a career out of trading. If there was three pieces of advice or three, you know, most important bits of advice, what would you say those are?
Okay, I would say one of the most important is make contact with other traders. Don't try and do this on your own. And when I say other traders that are really trading, you know, there are a lot of people that are going to offer you advice. There are a lot of people that are going to tell you things. But make sure that the people that you interact with are real traders who make their bread and butter. If for instance, you want to be a day trader, speak to a real day trader who deals with the everyday ups and downs of the market and all the psychology around that. Mm. Because what I found is that there are a lot of snake oil salesmen out there, people that will sell you the dream, you know, of sitting at the pool with a laptop and making them. That's not going to happen. No. That's not going to happen. Speak to people, stay in touch with them. Trading is like nothing else that you'd ever do in life. Okay. So you need to stay in touch with people, try and build a community around your trading of people that are honest and are, you know, have everybody else's interests at heart. Mm. And then I would say, you know, the other thing is manage risk and then manage yourself. Make sure that you don't trade when you're not well. Make sure that you don't trade when you're going through periods of other stress in your life, because if the market is a wonderful thing, but it's also a really dangerous thing that can grab hold of you and throw you out of mincemeat on the other end.
Yeah, that last piece of advice is good. I mean, I've certainly always subscribed to that myself and say, if you are going through a tough time in life, it's better to actually just step back and not trade, because it's funny, but you know, things can manifest themselves in the way that you trade.
Yeah,
and you do need to be positive and have a, you know, strong positive outlook if you're wanting to try and do this successfully. And I also speak from experience. I mean, I had a very bad breakup with a girlfriend many years ago and continued to trade, and it was a really tough time in life. And actually, I traded terribly. I really lost money. And I look back on it and I say to myself, you know, in retrospect, I should not have traded during that time. I should have rather just, you know, closed my screens off for 2 months, dealt with my own psychological issues, and then come back later with a better mind, headspace.
Yeah.
And I know I said last question, but I'm going to just sneak one more in. Do you read a lot of trading books, or have you read a lot of trading books in your years?
And yes, I have. I have. But
yeah, and any favorites?
I forget his name now, but the guy with the guy that lost all the money and what is his name?
I don't know because there's so many. I've read a lot as well. I want to say, are you thinking of Marty Schwartz, the pit bull?
No. It's the guy that talked about trading, you know, when
Mark Douglas, Trading in the Zone.
Okay, let's pick one. Mark Douglas, I suppose, was the one that's given me the best.
Yeah.
Try and pick the ones that don't talk about setups and the market specifics. Rather read the ones that are talking about psychology, and it will take you through the phases that you will experience, or the kind of experience that you will have as a trader, rather than the market specifics, because there are 101 books that will give you the setups and all that kind of thing. You know, that's not the important thing. The important thing is to know yourself and to know what it is to take on risk. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah, so it's the psychological aspect of trading. Yes. And that's it. And I mean, it's one of the common threads that come through all of these interviews that I'm doing with traders is that, first of all, everyone talks about Mark Douglas and Trading in the Zone as being one of their favorite books. And I completely relate, because it is my favorite trading book as well. And I try and read it once a year, just because I think from a psychological perspective, that book nails it better than any other book that I've ever read. And I don't think there's one chart in that book at all. It's all about the psychology and managing your mind and your headspace and your expectations and all of that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's interesting that book does keep coming up again and again. And he does make the point in that book that, you know, trading is 20% method and 80% psychology.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right, Mark. Well, it's really been super speaking to you.
I
appreciate your time so much. It's been a wonderful 30 minutes, and I'm sure that the listeners to this podcast are going to be really delighted to hear all of the information that you've imparted today. So thanks very much once again.
Okay, Garth. Nice making contact again. All right. You keep well. Okay.
Cheers. Thanks.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode of Talking with Traders, brought to you by IG, a world-leading CFD provider. We really are privileged to have such a leader in the field of online trading involved in this series. Please follow us on Facebook and engage with us there. And a reminder to make sure you subscribe to the series by clicking the subscribe button on your favorite app. Till next time.